journalists working for major international outlets in Gaza are facing increasingly dire conditions. Caught between the dangers of war and a worsening hunger crisis. With foreign press largely barred from entering Gaza, these outlets rely on local freelancers, many of whom now report that they are starving and unable to continue working. France's Internal Society of Journalists issued a stark warning this week, stating that without immediate intervention, the last reporters in Gaza will die. One photographer, Bashar, said he no longer has the strength to work, noting that his brother recently died of hunger. Others, like videographer Alam, says every assignment comes with the fear they may not return alive. The Associated Press and Reuters have also acknowledged the escalating crisis, with Reuters saying they are providing extra funds and daily support and are ready to assist journalists who want to leave. Despite their hardships, these reporters continue to risk their lives to inform the world, underscoring the vital role of local journalists in conflict zones. KPFA's longtime Gaza correspondent, Rami Al-Mughari, has reported for nearly two decades through war and blockade. But he tells me the conditions since October 2023 are unlike anything he's ever witnessed. With international press barred from entering the Strip, KPFA and other outlets rely entirely on Palestinian journalists who are reporting under fire, without food, fuel, or medical care. According to Reporters Without Borders, more than 200 journalists have been killed since the war began, making Gaza one of the most deadliest places in the world to be a reporter. Rami works from a bombed-out home, often hungry and often in danger, and he is not alone. Many freelancers describe losing family members to hunger and facing death each time they leave a shelter to do their job. The situation is untenable, not just because of the violence, but because these reporters are being starved out while trying to tell the world what's happening. Today, the Gaza Health Ministry reported that 15 more people, including four children, died of hunger in the last 24 hours. Hospitals say that at least 101 lives, mostly children, have been lost due to malnutrition, as Israel continues to restrict the flow of humanitarian aid. To hear how he's continuing to work and survive under these unimaginable conditions, I spoke with our reporter, Rami Al-Mughari, in Gaza.
My experience is different in Gaza from other non-reporters. It is dire, despite the fact that I do continue my work, my reporting. It is dire in a sense that you can't have a presence, you can't have the life has changed grossly and totally in the Gaza Strip, with no prospect for any kind of hopes, any kind of normal life, like education, health, and sanitation here in the territory. It is completely dire. Also, it is dire in the sense of the lack and shortage of food supplies, goods, and commodities in Gaza, which are very important for the one to continue his or her life. So for me, as a one who is hardly working, it is so difficult, it's so dire to continue working with less capacities, with less resources in your community, with the scenes of tents around, scenes of destruction also, make you somehow disappointed, make you somehow frustrated that life is no longer alive, is no longer normal, that like what like it was before the war broke out.
As someone doing one of the most dangerous jobs in the world, what motivates you to continue reporting?
This is a dangerous job, actually, but this is the job that I know, the job I have chosen. I have I have opted for the past 25 years. Since 2000, I started working as a journalist. So it is the job, the main job for me, that I can get by through, and I can help my family. So it is, as I explained in the first question, in the first answer, as I explained, I had to continue my work unabated, but I had to avoid whatever danger around, because I had to sustain this work. I felt that I had to sustain this work in order for me to help my family and help myself. I tried to avoid some kind of dangers when, for example, when there was an invasion into my hometown of Maghazi in central Gaza Strip. I chose not to work, not to report, because I was endangered, highly endangered in a war zone. My area was red zone, where danger was, where invasion took a place in my particular home town of Maghazi. So I had to stop working in order to avoid some kind of harm by this war that was very tough and very different from previous wars. This is an example of how I could make sure that I have, that I can avoid some of the danger that is imminent to me.
With widespread reports of starvation in Gaza, are you and your family experiencing similar conditions on the ground?
The hunger that is growing in the territory, yes, I can feel. I can feel it. I am too much affected by this situation of starvation here in the Gaza Strip, in the sense that I work relentlessly, for example, and I want to buy some flour, basic bread for my family. I can't find. If I find, I have to pay lots of money for that. I am a father of five children for whom I am taking care, and a family head. I have to be responsible enough to them. I have to buy flour for inflated prices to keep going and to keep working and to help feed my children, feed my family, actually. Despite the fact that very little goods and commodities are available in the community, I had to cope with what is available, like many others here in the Gaza Strip. The population of Gaza, we eat little. I eat little food for high prices, for inflated and skyrocketing prices, as I've just mentioned. For example, today I went to the market place to find out some goods for cooking here, but I didn't find except two kinds of vegetables that can be cooked. I picked up one of those vegetables for less than 1 kilo, because 1 kilogram is 45 shekels, which is about 15 US dollars. Can you imagine? Then I come back to have it cooked by frying it on a kerosene stove that is outdated 6 decades ago or 7 decades ago. It was used 7 decades ago, 6 decades ago, actually. The stove that is working by kerosene, but it is not kerosene. It is actually a crudely produced diesel that is produced here in the community by firing plastic sheets and making the people are just doing coping hardly, making some people making this diesel by means of firing the plastic and having this diesel. This is one of the means that I can sustain living or I can get by. And I would like to give you an example of the prices right here in the Gaza Strip. 1 kilogram of a flower is sold for at least 100 shekels, which is about $30. I myself need about 3 kilograms, 2 to 3 kilograms a day per day to feed my family. I have to buy that because I have to make sure my children, especially my little ones, are not starving, are not, because I do work. For me, I do work and I have to get them the foods that is available in the market. This is one of the examples of how I am coping with this situation of war in the territory, especially starvation.
Can you describe what your daily life looks like as you navigate both violence and scarcity?
My daily life looks like very hard. For example, I with a lack of food supplies here in the territory, I only pick some little breakfast, which is mainly some little bread with the falafel, for example, or some flour mixed with some other materials. We call it dukkah here, which is a very cheap, which used to be very cheap, and no one can pick, or little people can pick, or could pick, and or little people actually pick or eat before the war broke out. Now we have to eat this dukkah in Arabic. It's a flour with some ingredients melt, and we can have it. We can have it with the bread. Falafel, which is available for high prices here in the community. I pick up this breakfast, especially these days, with a lack of other food supplies like cheese, like butter, like for example jam, like for example eggs that are all are unavailable in the community. I sustain working. I sustain my day. When I have work, I do my work. On base after having this breakfast until I till the evening till the afternoon when I get some little food for lunch. I unfortunately when I do my work I want to buy something but I can't find a croissant, I can't find sweets, I can't find a cake or whatever to help me or even fruits that are unavailable in the community for the time being. Before, I used to pick up something while I'm working, but now I can't do that. I return back very hungry, and I eat in the lunch less than I used to eat before this crisis has deepened, the crisis of starvation and hunger. Yes, my daily life looks like, for example, also getting some water, always unavailable, the water, access to water as well. I have to bring some water with gallons from nearby and pay for them, like what I did today, because the building I live in doesn't have too much access to water. So sometimes I have to buy some gallons of water, which is good water, by the way, that is drinkable. I use it for the kitchen, for the bathroom, because I have to make sure that I have water inside my home, especially with the scarcity of water supplies in the territory because of the fuel shortage here and inability by the concerned parties to pump water into the buildings and the homes in Gaza.
What does it mean to you personally and professionally to continue reporting these stories under such extreme conditions?
What does it mean for me to keep telling those stories under such dangerous conditions? I told you before, this is a part of my, an integral part of my job that I have nothing but it. I don't have other jobs. My job is reporting and journalism. So I have to tell the story from based on that fact, on that sense that this is my responsibility as a journalist, as English speaking journalist, to tell the stories, and also from other time, from the other, from on the other hand, I just feel that if I don't do things, if I don't have to, if I don't make sure that my life goes at least on the basics, the least life I maintain, I have to make I always make sure to I always make sure to tell the stories because it is a part integral part of my job, which is my job actually, to tell the stories under such conditions with by taking care to by taking care as utmost care while I'm doing my job and picking up the stories that need to be told to them. To the world, especially the stories of suffering, stories of tense displacement, stories of bombardments, every strikes, and you might understand that in Gaza there are no foreign, no, there is no single foreign journalist working in the territory after Israel had prevented all foreign journalists from entering the territory since the war has broken out or has erupted actually. And so it feels like like a responsibility in my shoulders to keep reporting and to keep telling the stories of the people here, of the starving, of the suffering, of the wounded, of the grieved people here, their stories to the outside world, given the fact that there are no foreign journalists here in the coastal territory, which is plagued by a very unprecedented and tough war for the time being.
What role do you believe independent media outlets like KPFA play during a crisis of this magnitude?
The role that KPFA and independent media can and make is to continue telling the stories from the untold stories and speaking the truth to power. This is the main responsibility for KPFA to continue speaking the truth to power to all those concerned who might be involved in some kind of a change for Palestinian lives, especially the USA, where KPFA is based. USA is a key player in the politics of the region, particularly between Palestine and Israel, for Palestinians and Israelis. And I do believe that the more stories are told for your audiences, the more understanding or the better understanding can be maintained by your community, by your influential people, by your listeners and followers towards the Palestinian-Israeli conflict, in a sense that would enable, would maybe would likely influence the decision makers where you are in the USA for the best of some fair and good solutions for the problems of the region and helping Palestinians observe justice and Israelis observe peace and security. That is very important, actually.
And as figures like Donald Trump intensify efforts to undermine independent journalism, why do you believe it is critical to support KPFA and freelance reporters like you?
It is highly important that KPFA continue to be supported by the listeners, by followers, by fans of KPFA and independent media, because independent media constitutes another face of media. You know that in a country like USA, mainstream is overwhelming. Mainstream media is overwhelming. So there must be some kind of balance in terms of reporting, in terms of media, so the audience can have a variety of ideas, variety of thoughts, opinions, and aspects of the issues that the independent media is covering, or the media in general is covering where you are. So it's important to keep actually supporting KPFA for the best of some fair, good and balanced reporting that could help the mainstream media make sure that the truth is outspoken in the right and the best way. So it's really important. I believe KPFA deserves some much more support by its audiences, followers, and fans where you are and in every part of the world that indie media like KPFA is heard and followed.
Thank you, Rami. That was KPFA's longtime Gaza correspondent, Rami Al-Mughari, sharing his experience from the ground as international outlets like the Associated Press and Reuters raise alarms about the safety of their Palestinian correspondents. The role of local journalists have never been more vital. For KPFA, I'm Lauren Schmidt.